This is MuggleCast, your Harry Potter and Fantastic Beasts podcast covering everything about J.K. Rowling's magical world. This week's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible is the leading provider of audiobooks with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/MuggleCast. Welcome to MuggleCast, episode 284. I know what you're saying. We just did an episode a couple days ago. But as luck would have it, I really don't know what our... I guess you could say we're cursed. As we were recording, we found out the big news about The Cursed Child, the new and first Harry Potter stage play. As we learned about 40 minutes into our last episode, this is the quote-unquote eighth story. So, of course, everybody lost their minds. And we, while recording the last episode, didn't have enough time to process this. I mean, this is huge news. So we decided to record another episode. Eric and Mike are here this week, and I'm also happy to say Laura is here this week. Hello, Laura.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good to have you back
on
the show.
It's great to be back.
And I know you're excited as well. So
I am.
I guess here's the latest. We'll start with the latest news, and we'll pray that no more Cursed Child news breaks as we're recording. Yeah. So tickets went on sale in a pre-sale this morning, October 28th. I don't know about you guys, but I was up at 4 a.m. Pacific time. And ticket sales went very well. We'll talk about that a little later. As we digested in the middle of last week's episode, we have found out that this is an eighth story. That's the way they're marketing it, following Harry and his son, Albus Severus. And this is big news because they are explicitly...
Just Al, Andrew.
Just Al. I'm very sorry, Micah. We are being told this is a sequel to Deathly Hallows, and Harry's going to be overworked at the Ministry of Magic, and Al is going to be struggling with his father's fame, as well as, I guess, going to Hogwarts. It's set 19 years later when he's going to school. So now that we've had more time to think about this, how are you guys feeling about this whole idea?
I'm really excited.
Yeah? What excites you most?
Well, I mean, I don't know. This is just something that has been such a big part of my life for so long that being able to get another story from J.K. Rowling is just absolutely thrilling. I can't wait.
Yeah. It's really surreal, isn't it?
It does feel that way.
When we were recording last week, I was just sitting in awe. I never thought I would see the words "the eighth story" in an official capacity.
I thought it was done. I thought Harry's story was done.
Eric, you sound a little disenchanted.
Oh, you called me out.
Magic's not there.
Are you?
No, guys, I didn't get
Magic
tickets.
Magic is faded.
Oh, that's why you're feeling
that's why. That's why. I didn't...
Oh, I'm
I was
sorry.
Like 40,000 in line, and I didn't have a high lot of confidence. And the scalpers really discourage, like, or dishearten me. So that's why I'm disheartened. But I don't know, guys. This is going to be an interesting occurrence. I feel like on the last MuggleCast, we scratched the surface of things to talk about. Andrew asked, is it fair? You know, is it sort of exclusive? Does it exclude a big part of the fandom by being the theater?
Yeah, so this is what I wrote about this on Hypeable last week, and I was accused, at least by one person, of pandering, but I genuinely am concerned.
Was it because you wrote a letter? It was an open letter?
Yeah, exactly. People didn't like that I shared my opinion. No, what I'm concerned about is that this is, like I keep saying, being marketed as an eighth story. It's the tagline. So I think there's an expectation there that if you are giving us, dear Queen Rowling, if you are giving us the eighth story, I think this needs to be accessible to all. England, or more specifically London, is only easily accessible, affordably accessible, to 1% of the world population. The rest of us have to not only buy tickets to two parts of a play, but we also have to fly over there. And for somebody like me who's coming from LA, That's an $1,000 ticket.
Yeah.
So the question is, and people have been saying, well, Andrew, most plays, they are released in some fashion in, let's say, a book printed, like the script will be printed in the book, in a book, or, it'll be filmed. The play will be filmed. It won't be adapted like, you know, a Harry Potter movie was from a book, but it'll just be shot on stage. I think these are great ideas, but the question is, how long do we have to wait? Because Harry Potter fans are diehard fans. And we cannot, I know this sounds greedy, but we cannot wait 2-3 years from now to find out what happens in the eighth story in a book or a play. So naturally we're going to go on Tumblr and read someone's crappy recap.
I was going to say, I don't think it'll take more than a day and a half for us to figure out what happens.
Well, exactly. But is that how we should be consuming the story for the first time? No.
Oh, yeah, maybe not.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen.
Don't think what's going
to
happen?
I don't think it's going to happen that way. I don't think that we're going to have to find, I mean, I guess if you want to find out about it through crappy Tumblr recaps, you can. But I have a feeling, knowing J.K. Rowling and knowing the fact that she knows this fandom so well, she's not going to leave us empty-handed. I'd be very surprised.
I mean, just an official like West End review would probably do wonders to explain what happens and what's going on. And I'm sure they'll try and leave some things up to the people who can see it. But, I mean, right now, haven't tickets been sold through the beginning of 2017?
Yeah. So, and this is just the pre-sale. So yeah. If you planned ahead, you could make an account on, through this ticketing website and, you could get access to tickets this morning. It was 11 a.m. London time, 7 a.m. East. And I was one of the people and it was pretty streamlined. They gave you a custom email. You click on your custom link and they put you in the queue and everybody got the email before the on sale time. So you knew how long you'd be waiting. Now there were a lot of people. When I jumped in, I was like 14,000th in the queue and I was like, well, I guess I'm not going to see this. but luckily some other hypeable people were doing it as well and they got tickets. So, you know, we all kind of ganged up to make sure we got tickets for each other. And then I waited long enough and then I ended up helping one of my friends get tickets as well.
So when are you going? What is your date?
I'm going June 7th and 9th, baby. The first two shows, parts one and two.
How do you manage that? How do you swing the first two shows?
I was concerned as well, but I mean, you know, people got to travel far, so they can't just pick any day. But
oh, yeah.
I don't have any plans in next June, so.
Yeah.
So, Eric, what happened to you exactly?
So I found out about it too late was the thing. I guess I wasn't up on my cursed child news. Is all. So I said I was 40,000 in line. Actually, that's not true. I didn't get in the line. It was kind of a surprise to me, but I immediately said, oh, I shouldn't, to myself. I went to London this year and that cost me an arm and a leg and I just can't do another trip. Plus I was saving up for 2017, right? September 1st. 2017 is the 19 years later day, King's Cross Station. I had all these trips planned and Cursed Child, which came out and hit us in the face like early this week with all of these details. It was just not one of my plans. And yeah. So I want to be really receptive and really fair about the whole situation. But I think I decided early on, maybe even during last recording, that I wasn't going to go and see this. And it's possible that, you know, due to the resounding success that it is bound to have, that it'll come to New York.
Yes.
Maybe it'll be accessible. But then a part of me was thinking, you know, even if that doesn't happen, we've had a good run seeing J.K. Rowling, seeing Harry Potter events. Like,
so you're saying you've done a
Carnegie
lot.
Carnegie Hall
so you
and
upset.
Harry Carey Garp, like all these events that I've been to before have made me really happy. You know, maybe it's, I'm not going to say passing a torch because I'm still very much interested in being a part of this fandom. But if I never got tickets to see it, then I would feel happy for those who did still. And that's kind of my initial thoughts on the whole thing.
I probably won't see it.
Right.
No,
but I'm I don't have money.
Yeah.
But I'm still excited.
Yeah, I mean, this ties into what Andrew said earlier, though, but I guess I'm countering it in a way, and that is, you look at that being specifically in London, really only accessible to a specific part of the population. But the same 100%. Can be said for the studio tour. The same can be said for the theme parks.
So here's the difference, though. This is a new story. This is the eighth story. So I don't think you can argue that same point.
Yeah. Well, I would say I side partially with Micah, just because, I mean, what did people, even in, say, the middle of America, like, what did people in North Dakota do when at the movie premieres of the theme parks? Like, you know, there's still some people isolated. It's a big country. It's a big world. And even though the studio tour, for instance, which Micah just mentioned, has been to now maybe 10 or 14 cities, I think they keep going back to some. You know, there's still people who missed out on a really unique experience that was an official experience. Granted, it wasn't a news story. You're completely right, Andrew. But, you know, I wonder if there aren't just tons of people out there, who have never been to these events that can now go to this one.
And I do think people are going to be able to experience this all in some way. I can't imagine that with a lot of this news coming through Pottermore, that is not going to be a vehicle that J.K. Rowling and possibly those that are producing the play use, not only to market it, but to possibly release scenes, to release scripts, to do other things. Because remember, they've gone through an entire transformation. They're not what we knew a couple of years ago. So perhaps this is going to be part of, you know, their redesign and their relaunch, you know, heading into the next couple of years. I wouldn't go to London with intent of seeing this play. If I was going to London on a trip and had other things planned, maybe this is one of the things that I plan, but I don't think it has an impact on me, maybe the same way it's having on other people. The fact that this is new canon, that it's potentially additional story and characters and material. I don't know. Maybe because it's not being told through the same medium, it just doesn't have such a strong impact on me.
We are going to continue with today's discussion of The Cursed Child in just a moment, but first it's time to remind you that today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible is the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 180,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. Audiobooks are great to listen to when you're out and about, maybe doing some chores, maybe walking the dog, maybe walking to class. Whatever you're doing, when you listen to music, you could be listening to an audiobook and getting reading done a lot faster. For listeners of MuggleCast, Audible is offering you a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their great service. And this week, I am going to recommend, once again, Career of Evil by Robert Galbraith / J.K. Rowling. I am still listening to this book right now. I recently hit a big point in the book. No spoilers, of course. But this thing that I hit is exactly why I love J.K. Rowling's Cormorant Strike series. She slowly drops little tidbits about the two lead characters into the series on a whole. And I just love where these characters are going. I love their backstories, as tragic as they may be. Wink, wink. So visit audiblepodcast.com/mugglecast. You can hear this excellent book for yourself for free, or any other book in J.K. Rowling's Cormorant Strike series. audiblepodcast.com/mugglecast today for your free audiobook. And thank you, Audible, for your support of MuggleCast. So let's say J.K. Rowling decides to release this as, you know, she says, okay, you guys, come this August, after the initial run of shows and all that, we're going to film this, and or we're going to put this in a book. Which one would you guys prefer, book, or let's say you go into a movie theater, one of those Fathom events where you watch a play like live? Which would you guys prefer?
You know what? I'm going to actually say the filmed version of the play, because there is something about theater. It's meant to be performed. Sure, you can read it.
Yes.
Of course you can read it.
Put it on Pottermore.
Something like the stage directions. Yeah, you could put it on Pottermore. But like, does not do the justice to the production value. That this play is bound to have costuming and other things that will never show up in a book form, unless it's like a picture book, which they could do also. But I would vote between those two options.
Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, the illustrated edition.
The illustrated edition, yeah. Between those two options, I would definitely choose a filmed version, a live performance filmed.
I would like that too, but I would also like to actually have a print copy of the play.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be cool. I think it also, it'd be better if it's in the theater because you can gather with fellow fans and watch it for the first time. I think that'd be a cool experience. And if they did that next year, that would be a really great way to rev up the fandom before Fantastic Beasts opens next November.
You know, I have to say, I was surprised by just how quickly and how enthusiastically these tickets have sold today, you know, on short notice. This play is being billed as the eighth Harry Potter story, but it's not being written. It hasn't been written by J.K. Rowling. Like, it's authorized by her. Yeah. It's written by this other guy, and they like each other. And
that's the other thing.
Been some interviews with the creative team, but it's not technically written by J.K. Rowling.
She co-wrote it. And
did she?
What were you going to say about that point, Micah?
Yeah, I agree in part with what Eric's getting at here, which is you said that she co-wrote it, but you know, if it's not authentically hers and she's not the one fully behind the writing, I think that lessens the experience a little bit because yes, we saw some of this with her giving up, you know, the writing to Steve Kloves and David Heyman and all the directors throughout the course of the Potter films.
Think about that.
But, you know, you want it to be from her. And I know she's involved. I guess it just depends on the level of involvement. Like if you're going to sit down and you're going to read the script as if it's a story and it is sort of the eighth installment, you want to know that it's her pen to paper, that it wasn't really influenced by somebody who maybe has a little bit more experience in theater and scripting plays. So that's why, again, like this doesn't have the same level of impact for me that I see it having on a lot of other people. You know, in terms of, hey, like we're finally going to get more on what happened 19 years later.
Well, again, I think, and Micah, you kind of alluded to this, but I think that the media does matter, like the type of media being used. The reason that she handed over writing to Steve Kloves is because she's not a movie person. And I think the same reason that she's probably handed over some responsibilities on this case is because she's not a playwright. So I don't think that necessarily means that the original concept has been molded by other people, but maybe that she's allowing other people to help guide her in the best way to, you know, do this performance.
That's a fair point. And I do think though that then people would probably want the initial product that she put together, the story that she wrote that maybe then this person is taking and turning into a play.
Oh, I don't know that
on Pottermore.
Yeah, that would be. I don't know that exists though, because this whole process is collaboration. You know, it's all about John Tiffany and Jack Thorne, the writer and the director, meeting with J.K. Rowling. There was an interview with them actually. I'm reading these quotes that we've selected in this article on MuggleNet right now, but it says, here's one from Thorne. Jack went away and came back with this is from John Tiffany. Jack went away and came back with the first 40 pages. The big thing had happened. He'd written dialogue for Joe's characters, and they sounded like themselves. He'd brought them back. I can't tell you what it was like to see that. And then this is a quote from Thorne. Sometimes I can't believe it. The idea that we have written the eighth story of Harry Potter. The whole time I felt this great responsibility of the previous seven stories. Theater is very different from film. We've had to find our own way into the race. We are starting to see it all come together in workshops now, and it's just wonderful. And I have no doubt that it's wonderful. I'm sure that it is, but it's an interesting medium in general. And I basically blinked and missed, you know, the opportunity to see this, but I don't understand just how and why it's so popular. Is it that phrase, the next Harry Potter story?
That is certainly helping in a big way, but look, I mean, J.K. Rowling was involved in this. She did co-write it. So these things that happen are going to be considered canon for all intents and purposes.
Do you remember, like, the other day Star Wars tickets went on sale?
Yeah.
Everybody, like, sat on ticket websites? Like, that hasn't happened yet with Fantastic Beasts.
No. You know? And it won't.
And Fantastic Beasts is coming sooner.
Right, but that's a completely different set of characters. No, wait, what?
But that film, I'm just comparing the two because that film was written by J.K. Rowling. So it's like, here you have this cursed child, a theater thing that's located in one small geographical area, next year, across a year. And then you have this film that's coming out that she wrote. It's gotten everybody, you know, behind it. And it hasn't gotten near as much excitement. How does that work?
Because people care about the trio. People are dying to see what happened to Harry, Ron, and Hermione. I mean, you know, I was actually...
The seventh book settled that.
In light of all this, I recently did a search for, like, things that happened after Harry Potter ended or something like that. And I found this BuzzFeed article that recounts all the things that J.K. Rowling said about what happened to the characters. And it's been... I mean, you know, it's BuzzFeed, so everything gets big traffic. But it had been viewed over 5 million times. So people really care to learn what happened after the final book. And I think people have always really had an interest in Albus Severus and the other kids since reading the epilogue. Mm. So, I think that's why it's been so
popular. I want to correct myself real quickly. I made a huge mistake. It actually comes out, Fantastic Beasts comes out 18th November next year. I just made the mistake of saying it came out before Star Wars. Okay, so still, if they're selling tickets for a play well into 2017 already, where's that hubbub for Fantastic Beasts? Why is Fantastic Beasts, which I find to be personally more exciting, not getting that
because
kind
it's
of
not Potter response. Directly.
Well, I think also the Cursed Child is limited, right? Like Fantastic Beasts, you're going to be able to see in any theater anywhere around the world. This place, there's only one place you can go, and there's a very limited amount of availability.
And they haven't started promoting Fantastic
Beasts. Yeah, and I was going to say, let tickets go on sale, and then we can have sort of a basis of comparison for that. Yeah. But
okay.
Don't worry, Warner Brothers is going to hype it up.
Yeah.
Supply and demand.
Yeah, I mean, you know, does anybody here think that maybe J.K. Rowling should have actually written this as a book?
No.
No.
I will say this. I trust J.K. Rowling.
Yeah.
I trust her. She, like, I can't really think of one thing that she has done related to her stories in the entire time that we've been talking about them that has been bad. Except for the epilogue.
But, like the epilogue? No wonder you're not excited for The Cursed Child.
Yeah,
I am very excited about it, and I totally trust her judgment. I think this is going to be something new and very cool for the fandom.
But wait, what's your problem with the epilogue?
Yeah.
I didn't think it was the best piece of writing she's ever done.
I mean, yeah, I guess.
One of the things, though, about that I think back to is knowing that at least the foundation for the epilogue was written pretty much at the beginning. Mm-hmm. I wonder, you know, as she grew as a writer throughout the course of the 7 books, if maybe, you know, that's just her being less mature as a writer, and so it not fitting as well into the overall story.
Maybe she refrained from rewriting it towards the end of the process because she was so nostalgic for it.
I think she actually said that she didn't do very much editing on that.
Yeah.
And if you think of the timing of it, right? The fact that it was written pretty much from the beginning,
right?
You know, she was still writing Sorcerer's Stone back then. So I'm sure even she would say she evolved as a writer over the course of the years that she put this series together.
Oh,
so
well,
maybe that's why that doesn't fit as well.
Yeah, certain people have way other issues with the epilogue, though. They don't like that it paired everybody up, answered sort of, you know, relationship questions for shippers. They hate the epilogue for that reason. I'm a little, you know, ambiguous as to why, or ambivalent how I feel about it. But
real quick, could the epilogue ever have lived up to expectations? I mean, how do you end a series like that?
Well, that's my excuse for the 7th book, why I don't like the 7th book. It's like, oh, how could it
you
have
You don't lived like up the 7th book?
No, heavens no. But could it ever,
Wait,
could it ever have lived
no,
up?
No, but I was with you when you read it. How did I miss this?
And I was
too busy crying.
I was quiet in the corner, like the whole day. I remember this.
For that little tiny hotel room.
Internal rage.
No. It wasn't. It was something. It's a general. I won't get into that. But I am. I like that there's new stories being told. I like the idea of Harry as a father. The one thing that didn't sit with me for the whole series too is Harry as a, it was sort of the hero's journey, the way that the hero, if he survives the tests, you know, is immortal or is, he has no future. He's never allowed to grow up or go past that moment. It's, you know, once the stories are over, they're over. Now seeing that character that J.K. Rowling wrote that we're so familiar with as a father dealing with different challenges, that excites me. That I'm genuinely interested in seeing because it's outside, because of the time that has passed between when he was, you know, at Hogwarts age Harry and when he is now. I will say, though, part of these descriptions are making me think that there's that we're going to start seeing some Death Eaters recurring or something from the past. This evil that doesn't stay dead, whatever it was that the bio says, really worries me that there will be, you know, some stuff from the books that probably should just be left alone in the books.
Voldemort comes back.
Well, I don't know about Voldemort, but
I said this on the previous episode though, but just the fact that Albus could be cursed in the sense that he's Harry's child. Like I know that there could be, you know, actual dark forces at work throughout the course of this play, but just the sense that, you know, knowing that, and I think it mentions this in the description, that he has to live up to expectations. He has to live up to his, you know, his father and what his father was able to accomplish. Like, that could in and of itself make him cursed. So it can almost be a double meaning, but I like what Laura said earlier, just about the fact that it's continuing on Potter. It's making it still relevant here in 2015 and beyond. And I think they could have a lot of fun with this. I think that you could bring back so many actors to play different roles that are still alive.
None of them are coming back.
Well,
on the West End.
I will say there's, we're going to have like 30 more names to memorize. Like, cause the, like actor names to
think
keep
it'll be, that's an interesting question, Micah, but I don't think. I mean, we know Dan Radcliffe has done everything in his power to distance himself from Harry Potter, so he's not coming back.
Rupert needs something to do.
Rupert does need something to do. He should
poor
come back.
Rupert.
See, but wouldn't it be weird? I don't think they can cast anybody from the movies because it then that one person sticks out.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, and the other fun side of this is that J.K. Rowling's probably going to drop a bunch of interesting tidbits in here. So, for example, we don't know Albus Severus's house. What if he's a Slytherin?
He's totally going to be a Slytherin.
And this could be a chance, and I'm dead serious here, for J.K. Rowling to redeem Slytherins.
No.
Yes.
Make him a Hufflepuff. Redeem Hufflepuff.
Okay, redeem them both. I mean, maybe he can have a friend in Hufflepuff.
Yeah.
Maybe he dates a Hufflepuff.
That would be awesome.
He'll be a Slytherin, and he dates a Hufflepuff.
I'm sold. I'm going to get scalper tickets to see this.
Do you guys have any one question that you're hoping does get answered in this play?
That's a good question. That in and of itself is a good question.
Oh my gosh.
Does Harry spend any of, here's my question. Does Harry spend any of his time since he works at the ministry in the room with the veil, trying to commune with Sirius, or has he made any efforts to figure out just what the heck happened in that room?
Hmm.
I would like to know why she ended the epilogue with all is well, because clearly it's not.
Clearly it's not.
All was well for Harry.
Mm. All was well until.
So
19 years later.
She should have ended with Scar.
I agree.
Harry Potter and the Scar. So we asked on social media, what are your thoughts on this? We got some feedback. Mira writes, I'm a little frustrated that I won't be able to see it. I haven't yet heard anything about it coming to Broadway or going on tour, and even by that point, I feel like a lot of it will be spoiled online. I love theater, but I think the play is going to hit the fans differently since not everyone will be able to see it. So she has some feelings similar to ours. But I have to say, this definitely will be going to Broadway. This definitely will be touring. But, like Mira brings up, what are we going to do? Are we all people who aren't going to London? Are we going to wait? Mm. Or are we going to read spoilers online? I guess we'll do both, right?
I mean, more so than movies or books, this play will, there will be haves and have nots in the Harry Potter fans. It'll be divided for at least some period of time, as is acceptable. I would actually not like it if it were, say, available in theaters that, like, within a month of its release on the West End, because that would cheapen the experience of being there in person and seeing it. There's still something special about it. But so there's some period of time that it makes sense to wait before releasing the footage or the content of the play. But I don't know exactly where that line should be drawn.
I just think this is going to be a really interesting intersection of a community that is so easily riddled with spoilers, and then a community being the theater community where spoilers aren't really a thing. You know, like I go to Broadway shows here as frequently as I can, and you go up and you read the synopsis and it gives you the basic overview, and you kind of go into it sort of knowing how it's going to end. But you're not really there for the ending. You're there for the show. Right? You're there to enjoy the performance.
Yeah. Well, Laura, I have to ask, did you end up seeing It's Only a Play?
No.
While that was on Broadway? Okay, because Rupert was in that. And it was very funny.
Okay.
But I happened to see that. Yeah, so there's I've seen a lot of things with these people in it. I'm happy. I mean, I did miss Equus, but I got to see Dan on Broadway for How to Succeed when that came. And so I feel like I've been to a number of shows that I can be proud of, but I think I will miss
closer than London.
I will miss Cursed Child, most likely. Unless
I want to see Albus Severus come out as gay. Maybe that's one of the dark things he's struggling with.
A gay
with.
Slytherin.
A gay Slytherin.
Dating a gay Hufflepuff.
Yeah.
Never thought I'd see the day. It's like Luna Lovegood's son or something, I don't know, in Hufflepuff. Who's
no, it's Draco Malfoy's son.
Draco gosh. Malfoy would have a Hufflepuff?
Yeah. Scorpius, wasn't that his name?
Yes. What was his name?
Scorpius.
Malfoy's Scorpius.
I'm double checking. Is it? Was it a double name, though? No, it wasn't. Oh. According to the Harry...
a double name off of that?
I mean, like, Albus Severus. According to the Harry Potter wiki, his name is Scorpius Hyperion Malfoy.
What is with this generation of wizards and the weird names?
What's with any author and their weird names? I mean, like Stephanie Meyer this month with the gender swap Twilight.
Oh my god! Don't
calling
I don't
Edith
even
and
I can't even
Beaufort.
Oh, Beaufort. Oh, I didn't know that.
Or long for
Beaufort. How was that, by the way? Not to get off topic.
I haven't finished reading it.
Oh, okay. I was excited about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear, this play is actually gender swapped Harry Potter. That's the twist to get everybody in.
Ah. You know what? Actually, I'm going to change, or no, I won't change my question, but I'm really excited to see Harry and Ginny as parents, mostly for Ginny. I hope Ginny's a part of this show.
Yeah, I bet
and
she will be.
I hope she's a big part of this show.
Yeah, and I'm just imagining going to this surrounded by Harry Potter fans. And, you know, for myself, being at one of the first shows, we're all going to be learning. I presume there are going to be some May preview shows. There's going to be four, and I don't know who those are going to be for yet. Probably VIPs and whatnot. But I think being at the first fan, quote-unquote fan shows, will be really exciting. It'll feel like being at a Harry Potter conference or a book release.
Be something very special. You're right. You're 100% right.
Yeah. So if anybody wants to buy my ticket, I'll sell it to you for $1,000. For just part one.
Oh.
$10,000.
Can you do that?
For part two.
Yeah, they're separate tickets.
Oh, man.
That's the other thing. It's like, not only is J.K. Rowling dragging us out to London to see this, but it's also two shows. You know, and in fairness, the tickets are pretty cheap. But still, it's like, two parts, epic nature of the story.
And there's an intermission in each part?
Probably. They're two separate days. There are some days where you can see both parts in one day, but that doesn't seem. So I'm seeing it June 7th, and then I'll have a day to recover on June 8th and like theorize and speculate about what's going to happen. And then June 9th will be part two.
That'll be fun.
What if like Harry dies or something?
I don't.
Do you think she'll kill any characters in this?
She
almost said she should.
It's not controversial enough if she doesn't kill somebody.
Yeah, that's true.
It's
not Harry Potter if somebody, after book four, if somebody doesn't die.
What if Scorpius dies?
Oh.
He died of a bad name. Okay, well, we wanted to make this short. Anything else you guys wanted to say?
I am genuinely, like, I'm really excited that this is something that's happening. Like I said on the last episode, that J.K. Rowling is continually being intrigued by these various options, that she continues to roll out, you know, creative things that have to do in this world. Great. You know, I feel really happy about that, that J.K. Rowling is not completely ignoring the mass appeal of Harry Potter fans. And there's a commercial aspect to it, but I don't think that's what this is all about. And I don't think that's what Fantastic Beasts is all about. I mean, something about this story, when this writer and this director approached J.K. Rowling, something about the story clicked, just like when Warner Brothers approached her about Fantastic Beasts. Something clicked. And she has said yes, and I think I'm along the lines of what Laura said, you know, going to be trusting of J.K. Rowling, trusting that the quality is there. So I am excited for this to be unleashed upon the world. I look forward to reading everybody's response to it.
Yeah. It's an exciting time in fandom, I think. And I just, you know, this has been an exciting month for Harry Potter fans.
Oh, heck yes.
Illustrated edition and this and the J.K. Rowling's book, new Corman Strike book. So yeah, I'm very excited for this play. I think it's going to be very fun to talk about and very fun to experience. So, Laura, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Laura and I are at millennialshow.com doing the weekly podcast. Eric and Micah are at gameofowns.com. Mm-hmm. And we'll see everybody sometime in November for more. I think we should do a deeper talk on what J.K. Rowling should do in this play. Like, what can she give us? Like redeeming Slytherins, you know, things like that. Like,
like I said, redeeming Ginny, definitely. Because
we'll
even
really
in the
have
books,
to start theorizing.
Oh yeah, Ginny. Because I really did not like Bonnie Wright's portrayal as Ginny.
Well, no, it's not just the movies. In the books, the best days of Harry's life during year six are spent off screen. You don't read about it. It's like Harry talks about, oh, all these wonderful sunny days alongside the lake by the giant squid by that tree, under that tree. And you're just like, okay, this is a POV book of Harry and we didn't see that happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, for time or whatever. So J.K. Rowling robbed the Ginny and Harry thing, even in the books. And I want to see some very intense, dynamic relationship that really hooks to me. That's what I'm most looking forward to now.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll see you next week or next month, sorry, for episode 2.
You never know.
85.
You
never know. Coming soon, Harry Potter 9. You'll have to go to the moon to see it. See you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.